The movie opens with Kirk's birth in Aberdeen, Washington, tracking his childhood, adolescence, rise to fame, his romantic attachments that eventually included an unrelenting affection for heroin. Kurt started drawing at a very young age, illustrating early on that it was a way to express himself, continuing even when his music took over as the central escape route for all his never-ending emotional pain. Montage of Heck is a detailed, laid-back kind of look into his life that includes his notebook, scrap paper scribblings, an abundance of home videos, family photos, and talking head interviews fleshed out with animated sequences. The perspective is offered through multiple lenses: son, artist, high school misfit, friend, rock star, husband, father, and victim of fan obsession. He was an outcast, a rebel, and a social misfit, and he attempted suicide for the first time in his teens, where by luck the train he waited for on the tracks to end his life changed its route at the last minute. It caused him to give life another chance. Strong-willed, rebellious, and unable to stay still as a kid, his divorced parents couldn't handle him, so he was continually shuffled back and forth among relatives. It supposedly instilled in him a yearning for some traditional, stable family life. He thought he could create that with, of all people, Courtney Love, but discovered that a happy family is not so easily accomplished. The Leave It to Beaver dream he wanted would not have resolved his inner demons or sense of alienation. His perpetually restless spirit drove him to remain unhappy with every road he traveled, good or bad. Aside from the personal, Montage of Heck offers a load of music for Cobain fans where I could understand its appeal to teens suffering from those years so typically filled with angst. His music made alternative music like punk rock mainstream, laced with uncomplicated melodies and a background of raucous accompaniment. Poetic lyrics and a voice that communicated an emotional resonance made him into a hero, a burden he didn't want and couldn't carry. Filmmakers frequently have found Kurt a great subject, a charismatic mystery with the handsome, grungy image and carrying an aura of tragic romanticism. In 2005, Gus Van Sant put out Last Days, the fictionalized story of a rock musician who succumbs to the intensifying pressures of fame, goes into isolation, and kills himself. Also in 1998, there was The Lurid Kurt and Courtney, a documentary that explored Kurt's tumultuous relationship with Courtney Love and endorses conspiracy theories that she might have killed him herself. Both are films that focus on his death and its collateral damage. Montage of Heck focuses on his life and his music instead of just the sensational aspects. This documentary has no narrator and fewer talking heads than usual, so it feels like Kurt is telling his own story with some parts that are uncomfortably personal. Courtney is a constant presence, of course, and offered all of Kurt's possessions for the making of the film. Montage of Heck doesn't slant its evidence one way or another in relation to her. Both were self-destructive, saved briefly by the birth of their child, a scary proposition to have been born into that mix. The documentary ends with Nirvana's MTV Unplugged performance in 1993, right near the end of Kurt's life. So the movie concludes with the focus on his life and the talent, rather than the tragic. Nevertheless, Montage of Heck will leave you with an incredible sense of loss. And that wraps it up this week. For Connie's Huff Lashes, on the movies.
Hey, this is WFT Champaign 90.1 FM. You're listening to The Midwatch. I'm Reasonable Man Stan, and I welcome you back this week to another edition of this wonderful program. I want to remind you that WFT is community radio for East Central Illinois. We are here largely because of the graces, the graciousness, the charity, if you will, of you. This country used to be dotted with hundreds of stations like this, where people were able to research, if you will, issues that interested them, whether they be gardening or cooking or doing things in a workshop, rebuilding houses, selling houses, or talking politics, or talking about travel, or talking about any number of other subjects. But these programs are being shut down by the need of the conservatives to transfer as many dollars as possible to not only the military-industrial complex, but the medical-industrial complex and organizations like that. Organizations that are largely supported by tax dollars in a socialistic approach where you give the taxes and the government decides on what groups of people should be the winners in society. And for decade upon decade, more than 50 years, probably more than 100 years, the primary beneficiary of the graces of our country's economic prowess has been the military-industrial complex. But our country is coming to a point where we have to make some decisions. We have to make some choices. And before I get any deeper into the program, a little Tom Morello. Which side are you on?
How the good old Union has come in here to dwell. Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Will you be a lousy scab, or will Don't scab for the bosses, don't listen to their lies. Poor folks ain't got a chance unless they organize. Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
Yes, yes, yes. Many, many times during our lifetimes, each and every one of us has to make a decision as to which side we're going to be on. It's a choice between good and evil, between right and wrong. It's a choice between love and hate. Honor and dishonor. We have to make these choices on a daily basis. And the temptation to take the easy route is always the hard, the wrong, is always the easiest and the wrong choice. Here at WFT, my goal on the midwatch is to try to separate the wheat from the chaff to a certain extent. I try to take away the lies and misinformation that you receive from the corporate media, the leadership of the Republican Party, and the RNC. The vast majority of information that you get from those sources is lies and misinformation. I'm no saint. I make mistakes and I admit to them freely when I do. But I do my research and I do try to tell you the truth. And when the truth hurt somebody that I don't want to get hurt, it's still the truth. It's still what we need to talk about, we need to know about, we need to support, and we need to decide to be on the side of truth and honor and integrity. That's what most community radio stations do. A lot of them spend their time on music. Some of them provide great programs like Amy Goodman and the media watchdog group, FAIR, that you hear here on WFT. WFT has its own programs of similar high quality. We have the World Labor Hour at 11 o'clock each Saturday morning. We have News from Neptune, which is a program that replays audio clips from very learned individuals from the left-hand side of the aisle. The side of the aisle that the Republican leadership and the corporate media do not want you to know. The World Labor Hour speaks about the oppression of middle-class Americans worldwide. Middle-class individuals worldwide, and specifically middle-class Americans. Because after all, many of us would rather help our neighbor who lives two doors down than our neighbor that lives a continent away. The corporate media has done everything they can to take the spectrum away from nonprofit organizations like WEFT by cutting our funding, by selling the spectrum to other people and organizations that don't necessarily teach the same kind of lies you get from the false news stations such as Faux News, but they teach you a different kind of lie, a different kind of belief system that is dependent upon believing that a man 2,000 years ago had a book, series of books, written about him 200 years later that were exactly correct. And that belief system is nice, but a lot of the people that say they follow that belief system, those people call themselves Christians. And a lot of those supposed Christians are the worst money grubbers around. Most cities, if you look at the city skylines, most smaller towns, let's say it that way, most smaller towns, 10, 20,000 people. You look at the skylines of those smaller towns, and you will see that the nicest looking buildings in those towns fall into two categories. The money changers, now called banks, the money changers, now called insurance companies, and the churches. A different kind of money changer, but a money changer nonetheless. All of those organizations are after your money. One of them tells you they're going to show you how to increase your money, make it more, so that later in life you will have more money. And they scrape their percentage off of us and build cathedrals. They build huge edifices to their money changing process. Second one of those organizations promises to take care of you in case of an emergency, whether that be a house fire, auto accident, or the loss of a loved one, or a disability. They promise to take care of you. And those companies that promise to take care of you when you get sick spend as much money trying to prevent the payment of the covered charges as they do covering the charges because they don't really want to cover for the sickness. Regulation could change that, but conservatives, otherwise known as Republicans, hate regulation. Regulation could change the banking industry so that some banking processes do not cost you 300 or 400% a year in interest. 300 or 400% a year in interest is not a hard number to find when you're talking about payday loans. Not sure what the interest rate is on those auto title loans, but it's high. And if you're looking at that interest rate at the pawn shop, you're looking at 100% or more. When interest rates were regulated, many interest rates were limited to 10% a year. They were limited to 10% a year. But because the conservatives, otherwise known as Republicans, otherwise known as deregulators, took away the regulations to protect middle-class Americans. They chose the side they were on. They were on the side that takes your money and transfers it from your pocket to theirs, and they call it interest. The third source that I was talking about that wants your money has also got the first or second nicest buildings in most communities of 10,000 or so. Some of these facilities literally cost millions of dollars and are made of shatterproof glass so that you can see the wonderful sights within. The people that run these facilities frequently have private jets so that they can go here and there to bring you the truth of what they believe to be God. But it's just another way to transfer your money from your pocket to theirs. Usually about this time of year, you start hearing a few preachers talk about how evil it is to give money to poor people. Maybe not this time of year, but this time of season. They talk about how bad it is and how the Bible teaches that if you do not work, you should not eat. Of course, that is a misrepresentation of what the Bible says. Because although the Bible says those words, it was not talking about the general populace. The Apostle Paul was not talking to his teachers about the way they were to treat the people they were teaching. He was talking to the teachers of the Word of God and telling them that if they wanted to be teachers of the Word of God, they first had to be examples to the people they were teaching and show them that they had to work for their food. They didn't get to live off of the gracious goodness of the community that goes to their churches, but rather they are to work at factories. They were to fish and farm and then teach the Word of God on the weekends, on the Sabbath, not to suck the money out of widows, taking the widow's mite, if you will, and using it to build their glass cathedrals, their edifices to a God that told them not to do that. Twenty-six minutes past the hour here at WFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is a call-in show, folks. So give me a call at 217-FLY-LIVE. That's 217-359-5483. 217-359-5483. Give me a call. Add your voice to the program. Almost a half an hour of my program is gone, and I haven't even got into my topics yet. Quickly, we're going to talk about the wonderfully, what do you say, the wonderful leadership of and integrity of a guy by the name of Ken Starr. You remember Ken. We're going to talk about that a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit about Donald Trump. We're going to talk a lot about abortion. Last week, I was lucky enough to have a caller by the name of Will that wanted to talk about abortion. And we had a rather interesting conversation, except he waited until late in the show to get into to get his dialing finger out. And he didn't call very early. You need to give me a call early in the show. We can have a long conversation if you will just do that. Because I have an open line here at WFT Champaign. I have a line that nobody screens your calls, and you and I are the ones that determine how long the call is. As long as you are within FCC guidelines, you call in and haven't had a couple of margaritas too many or whatever, we could have a in-depth conversation about many topics. And I have a lot of information about abortion tonight because of Will last week. I hope he calls tonight. We'll talk about Trey Gowdy, Varney and Company, the liberal war on cops. Those are topics that we didn't get to last time. We're going to talk about Germany. We're going to talk about Governor Rauner's pretend budget. He doesn't want a budget. And I'll tell you why. If we get to that one tonight, if we don't get to that one and you want me to tell you, you give me a call at 217-FLY-LIVE. That's 217-359-5483, 217-359-5483. Give me a call. We can have a conversation. We can talk about most anything. It's not that I know everything. I just have opinions. My first opinion is that you need to call our station during normal work hours. That's 217-359-9338, and make a pledge to keep this radio station on the air, because the conservatives have done everything they can to get us off the air. We have a caller. Maybe it's Will. Good evening. You're on WFT. May I have your first name, please?
My name is James.
James! Good evening, James. How are you doing this fine evening?
I'm wonderful.
What have you got
and
to
yourself?
Add? I am, I really am walking on clouds this evening, James. I had a tremendous amount of pressure taken off of me last night, and I would I would like to tell you about it over a cup of coffee another time. What have you got to add to the program, James?
Well, I was listening to you, and you've kind of blown me away. I'm not from Champaign, but I am from Illinois. And I am one of those so-called Christians that you talk about. I love the Lord Jesus Christ with all my heart and soul. And I'm not worried about how much I give to him. But you said that the biggest two buildings and the best-looking buildings in most communities are the churches and the insurance companies?
The banks.
And they're affiliated with insurance. I think if you'll take a look around, I think the best-looking buildings in most communities are government buildings. You go to St. Louis and look at the federal building there. It's the largest building in the city. You go to Chicago and you look at the Dirksen Federal Center. You look at the State of Illinois building there. You look at the buildings in Springfield. Those buildings are all honor to man. They're all honor to a government. When you talk about the 10% bank fees that were instituted, I don't know when or where that ever happened, but I remember when Jimmy Carter was in office, my wife was a employee of a bank, and the interest rates back then, when the great Democrat was in office, were 17.9% on a 90-day certificate of deposit.
What year was that?
That was 1979, sir. I do believe that some of your facts and figures
Do you know what year that the interest rate peaked out?
It was when Ronald Reagan first got in office. But that was all enacted before he got in office.
No, it wasn't. I'm sorry, James. I'm not trying to be argumentative, but what you're saying isn't exactly correct. The highest interest rates came to be in 1982 after Ronald Reagan had been president for a year. And the reason the interest rates went up as high as they did was because we were in an inflationary spiral that was caused by Richard Nixon, and somebody had to do something about it, and the Fed was the answer, raising interest rates.
The Fed was the answer, and unemployment boomed. The nation was severely damaged. It wasn't making any kind of recovery. It was stagnant.
When did the unemployment rate peak?
After your friend Jimmy Carter left office in 1982, I imagine. But I imagine it peaked again here recently. And that was, you know, the government does not do the best with our money. The government does the worst with our money. We have prisons that abound in this country.
We do.
I quit the federal prison system in 1985. There were 384,000 people incarcerated nationally. That was city, state, county, everywhere. We are now at 2.9 million people incarcerated.
That's true.
We haven't done anything to help the people of this country, but we have helped a lot of rich Democrats, the Kennedys. You think these people are being benevolent in their actions. You think that Madigan is doing good by the state.
I didn't say that.
All they're doing is bankrupting the state of Illinois. Governor Rauner went in there with an idea that he could change something because he thought he had good business sense. He ran into what's known as good political sense. These people have 30 years ensconced in the political structure of this state. They continue to run this state, and they won't let anything Rauner say go. They won't get the thing passed. Go ahead, your turn.
Yeah, let's try to keep. I love talking to you, James. I think you've got a lot of things that you want to talk about and are willing to talk about, and that's all good. And as far as I'm concerned, I've got an hour and a half almost left in this program, and it can just be you and I. But let's try to take them one topic at a time, okay? Let's go back to what I said about the largest and nicest-looking buildings in any community of a size of about 10,000 people. That's what I said. Was I right or wrong about that?
You're wrong.
I'm wrong?
The best looking building in any community of about 10 to 20,000
right.
is going to be the government building. The government is building mausoleums under themselves. We have a courthouse in Marion, Illinois, that's one of the prettiest buildings in the whole city. 20,000 people in the community. The courthouse is the best looking place around. It's better than the Catholic Church as far as its outward appearance.
What's the size of Marion?
20,000.
Okay. Let's back up to what I said. I said of a community of 10,000. I was specific about a relatively medium-sized, larger. I grew up in a city of 300. I live in a city of 300 right now. I don't live in Champaign. I don't live in Urbana. I live in rural Illinois. And if you look at a city anywhere in this country that has a population of 10,000, the nicest looking buildings will be the banks and the churches. That you can take to the bank.
Well, I venture to say that people invest in both of those places because they are nice places. People invest in a bank. Nobody would invest in a rat hole of a bank. When I worked at Marion Federal Penitentiary, we had a warden whose name was H.G. Miller. He was better known as High Gloss. He kept that place looking shiny, pretty, wonderful. And his theory was nobody would fund a rat hole looking prison, but they would fund his. We here in this country, and populations under 10,000, there are a few small communities, and Harrisburg is one of them, where I can guarantee you their courthouse is not only one of the prettiest buildings in the town, but it's the main feature of the town.
Harrisburg is, what is Harrisburg's relationship to the state?
Harrisburg is a community that is the head of Saline County.
There you go.
State of Illinois.
There you go. It's the head of the county. What's the population of the county?
Saline County maybe has 15,000 tops.
Okay.
Maybe. It's rural America. It's a rural community, and to a certain extent,
you and I are agreeing on something without agreeing on it. If you look at small-town America, 10,000 people, the best-looking buildings are banks and churches. Once you start getting a little bit bigger in population and you start talking about county seats, now you're talking about buildings that are built for the entire county. They're not just the community. They're the entire county. So they take all those towns of 300 and they add those to the towns of 10,000 and they end up with a $15,000 or $20,000 population base. That's what I'm talking about, the population base. If you look at
the population base in any one given area, and if you go to rural America, the people that are putting their investment in their church, their not only their monetary investment, but their physical investment aren't doing it because they think they're being filched out of their money. And they're not money grubbers. I know a lot of people that go to very small rural churches that fund those churches just as well as some people fund the big church in the big community. In fact, better than those people, because
you're talking about individual people.
I am. And individuals are what make up a community.
That's true.
And if individuals choose to invest in banks, if individuals choose to invest in churches, if you even get down to a community of 300 or 400 and there's a bank, I can almost guarantee you the people in that bank are going to be from that community, and they're going to be trying to help that community do better and grow.
Oh, the employees,
the only way they're going to grow.
The employees of banks are very good people. I don't disagree with you there. But the fact of the matter is, bank employees are well known historically for their titles more than the money that they make. You get to be a teller, you make a little over minimum wage. You get to be a head teller, and you get to make a little bit more. You get to be the president, the CEO, and you are making thousands of times what the average bank employee is making. You know that, don't you? Jamie Dimon makes thousands of times what the average bank employee makes for his bank.
But when you take the size of his bank, and the investors at his bank, they're investing on what Jamie Dimon's skills and what his business acumen can bring into that bank. More investment. But that's not in your small community. Jamie Dimon is not, he's not John Farmer, the bank president at Farmer Savings and Loan in Anna, Illinois.
No, he's not.
He's not. And the guy who's there trying to take care of his community in the small community, which is what you were talking about, is not a money grubber. He's not out there trying to filch all he can from his people. He's trying to see his community at large do better. And a lot of them have been burned by the Jamie Dimons of the country and by the rich people. That doesn't make them politically astute. It doesn't make them money grubbers. It makes those people in a position that they can take, and they manipulate and do take. And a lot of them do end up in trouble eventually.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
What is your general opinion of a lawyer?
Most lawyers should not ever hold a political office.
And I'm not talking politics. I'm talking about, what is your general opinion of a lawyer? Are they good people? Are they bad people? Are they just average kind of people?
I think the majority of them are good people led astray by a system that allows them to go astray.
Okay, so they've become bad people because of the system, in your opinion?
Well, because they wanted something out of the system that they couldn't get any other way. And when they found out how the system was played, they played it.
Do you know that when you go, how many lawyers' offices have you been into?
Well, more than you'd care to know about.
Okay. When you sat in front of that desk, you were looking at the lawyer probably across a very large desk. Behind him was a bookshelf, usually of cherry wood, very beautiful. Why?
trying to give me a good impression of him.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what all of these organizations that I'm talking about try to do. The average lawyer, in my opinion, should not have a law degree. They shouldn't even have a law degree. The average lawyer, right now in the state of Illinois, we've got more than 20,000 lawyers. That means we have more than one lawyer for every 18 people. And yet those lawyers are all trying to support that cherry bookcase, that giant desk, that beautiful facade behind them, and they're all doing it with your money.
They're not doing it with my money.
Well, that's...
the reason they're not doing it with my money...
They're doing it with clients' money.
They're doing it with clients' money, but I'm going to tell you how I feel when I walk into a lawyer's office. I know I'm about to get hurt. I know I'm about to be robbed. I don't go into their offices very often anymore, but as a younger man working in law enforcement, I was involved with a lot of them. The average lawyer in this country is trying to be something he's not. You're right. He has a facade.
Right.
But his facade is not going to hold up when he stands before a fair and just God. And I wouldn't want to be in his socks for his shoes, because that facade is only condemning him to a devil's hell.
Okay. All right. I get your point, James, that you're a very religious man, and I appreciate that. And I understand that. But let's go to the religious side of it just a minute. Are you familiar with the text that I quoted? I didn't quote, but I paraphrased.
I don't know that I heard that.
When I was talking about the Apostle Paul telling his ministers, his teachers, to go out and get jobs and work in the communities that they were servicing, have you read that part of the Bible?
Yeah, but he didn't exactly tell them to go get jobs. What he told them in another text was leave everything behind and go and tell the good news.
Okay.
And you will be taken care of.
Okay.
God will take care of you.
Okay.
And the ones that did that, and Paul being one of them, had the greatest impact on humanity today. He's still being talked about. You and I are talking about him right now. But he's not the Savior. The Savior is the Lord Jesus Christ.
You're not getting my point.
That they shouldn't take money from the people? Well,
they
in
shouldn't,
the beginning of the Bible...
They shouldn't
the
live off the people.
They shouldn't. No, they shouldn't. You know what? They shouldn't be worth their hire. They shouldn't... We shouldn't pay them anything at all. They should go and work a full-time job and take on a community of 300 people and say, all your problems, come to me with them. I'll pray for you. I'll talk to you. I'll communicate with you. And I should get nothing for this. And I'll go work my 16-hour day. At some point in time, we as a society have put so much on our ministers that a lot of them couldn't work a full-time job and deal with what they have to deal with in the church. That's a fact. That's America as it is today, even in the smallest of communities.
Well, I guess we're going to have to agree to disagree again, because I think that back in the beginning, when the Apostle Paul was talking to his teachers were a smaller minority then than they are now. The teachers of Christ are a higher majority now than they were then. When I lived in Virginia Beach, and I can't remember the guy's name, but he started a church called the Rock Church in Virginia Beach. And he grew that church by leaps and bounds. He had, I think the last I heard, he had 3 limousines and 2 chauffeurs. He had the mansion on the hill, if you will, beautiful church. You know what his 2 prior jobs were before he learned to teach the Word of God?
I have not a clue.
He was a con man. He got out of jail twice before he realized where he could take the most money from. And that's what many ministers are doing today. They are living off the people, pretending to be members of a wonderful organization, and they are sucking the energy out of that organization as fast as they can. They are destroying what Jesus Christ wanted it to be like.
When I go to church, I go to church not looking at the man in the pulpit, not looking for him to be my Savior, not looking at him to be anything more than a man. Paul was no more than a man. Jesus was God in the flesh. Jesus is who I have to look to for my salvation, for my healing, for my wealth, for everything I have. For when I leave this life, and I am going to leave, there's not one of us going to get out of it alive, I have to go before a fair and just God. Jesus is my lawyer at that time. He represents me to God. He says whether I can get in the gate or not. He's the only key that can get me in the gate. If I have a corrupt preacher or pastor or a man who has pillaged the flock, who has come in and done wrong.
You mean like the Catholics?
God would take care of them, huh?
You mean like the Catholics?
Well, you know what? I'll guarantee you there's going to be Catholics in heaven. I'll guarantee you there are going to be people that have a relationship with God that are involved in the Catholic Church. There are going to be people from every walk of life in heaven who have a one-on-one relationship with Jesus Christ.
You're right. You're right. There will be Catholics in heaven. I agree with you there. But it is also the Catholic Church that protected their pedophiles from a just reward on this planet. And I cannot forgive them.
Did Dennis Hastert get his just reward recently?
No.
15 months in a federal correctional hospital for molesting people. And they didn't even put him away for molesting those boys.
That's right. I was going to say that. He wasn't found guilty of molestation.
No, he wasn't, but he admitted to it. This is the third man from the presidency. If the 2 above him had died while he was the Speaker of the House, he was the 3rd one in succession.
Correct.
And he's a child molester.
Correct.
How great is our government? How great is the regulation that allows such a thing?
Well, the only thing I can tell you for sure is he was a child molester while he was teaching in high school. Our judicial system is set up in such a way that child molesters have a statute of limitations on their crimes. So the only crime that he could be held accountable for was the bank fraud that he was doing. And the bank fraud that he was doing was by legislation that he pushed through Congress himself. So justice did come through. What?
I said, make sure that your mouth will make snares for your feet. That's exactly what happened to him.
Right.
He talked that legislation into existence, and it made a snare, and he's the one that got caught up in it.
Well, he's one of the ones, but yes.
He's one of the ones, but and there's a lot more. Not only Catholics. Hey, you know what? there are people that say they're God-filled Holy Ghost preachers who are out here who have molested children.
James Jones.
But I know that when they walk in the gate, they're not going to be greeted with, "Well done, my good and faithful servant."
I know that too.
Unless they have repented of that sin, they're not coming in the gate. When I worked at Marion Federal Penitentiary, we had a man named Clayton Fountain. Clay Fountain killed five people that I observed. I watched him kill five people. I know he was a mean guy, a bad man, a terrible evil man. But I recently heard that before he passed away, he came to the knowledge of Jesus Christ. He repented of his sin, and God is faithful to forgive. And I know that if he did repent of his sins, and he was following the word of Jesus Christ when he died, he's going to be in there.
Well,
should I hate him? Should I hate a Catholic priest because he molested a child?
Yes.
And he got saved and was redeemed from his folly? Yeah, because maybe the kid never got saved.
Right.
Maybe he did some damage that couldn't be repaired. Irreversible damage.
Always does.
Well, but I can't hold all Catholic priests in that eye. I can't keep them there because they're not all doing that. I knew a Catholic priest that was a drunk, an absolute alcoholic.
Yeah.
Staggering, falling down 99% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make him bad? Does that make him worse? Does that make him... I am not placed in judgment over him. But
nope.
God is. And God knows his heart. And that's who I have to look to. When I contribute to my local church...
That's what the book says.
When I contribute to my local church, I give my money freely. And mm-hmm. I don't... After I've given it, it's whoever to do with as they see fit.
Yeah.
I go to a church now that has a board of directors. They dictate where it goes. I used to go to a church that had one man that was in charge of all of it.
Mm-hmm.
He was 84 years old. His son and one of his people that he set up to be a bishop underneath him have sat him down and forcibly retired him at 84 years old. You want to know what his problem was? The church wasn't taking in the kind of money that it took to sustain the church, the daycare that they'd started for poor black children, and his home. His home, the water pipe broke in the front yard, and he didn't know that if he had enough money where he could fix the water pipe, keep the daycare stocked, and take care of the church. So he let the water pipe go in his own life. I know he's not filching the church. I know he's not stealing from the church. I know that people like
there
him
are
exist.
Good. There are good people everywhere, and there are good people that don't go to church just as there are good people that go to church. We're not arguing that, James. The reality is that the church was built by Jesus Christ fighting against the moneylenders, fighting against those that took money from poor people and used it for their own benefit, fighting to make sure that the teachers were part of the community and worked with the people on a daily basis and didn't just show up for 2 hours on Sunday morning and hang around their houses the rest of the time. We have too many preachers in this country today that do little or nothing. They just wait for the church to pay the mortgage on the house that they're living in as a parsonage, and they pay little or no attention to people who really need help. I just went through a period of time where I called for more than an hour and a half to try to find facility in Champaign-Urbana for a 21-year-old girl and her two small children, and none of them would take them to help them. None of them.
And that's a pitiful state for the city of Champaign to be in and the people of Champaign to be in. Because I guarantee you, you could walk up to the truck that I drive and said to me, I have this 21-year-old woman with two children who is homeless, and she needs help. And I would have emptied my wallet. I would have emptied the contents of my soul to her, because I know when there's a need, I'm supposed to fill the need. But the reason God was upset with the money changers and all of that that went on in the Bible is God is a jealous God. And he said his first commandment is, thou shall have no other gods before me. Money is a lot of people's God.
The Virgin Mary is a lot of people's gods.
You know, she's part of a different sect or religion that I've never been privy to, other than when I was young, I went to church with some friends because we wanted to play baseball after church. And the youngest of the boys could tell me, here's where they're going to ask for money. Right here. He said, when he does, Dad said he's going to get up and walk out today. Well, he didn't. But they knew, according to the program or whatever you want to call that, when this was coming.
Yeah.
But that's,
James,
that's not the way it should be.
It's not. We both agree on that, and I'm glad for that. James?
And because there are people who focus on that, they don't focus on the needs of other people.
James, have you got another 15 minutes or so?
I got all night.
You got good. I've got another hour, but I have to do a couple of things. I'd like for you to stay on the line, and I'll come back to you. I mean, you're going to stay on the line, and you're going to hear what I'm doing, because I got to play a couple of public service announcements and make a station ID. This is WFT Champaign. WEFT Champaign, 90.1 FM. There's the station ID. I'm going to do a public service announcement, and then I'm going to come back to you, and I want to talk about Bruce Rauner and what a terrible job he's doing to the state of Illinois.
And,
okay?
And while we're at it, we can talk about the other ones that are doing the job, too.
We can talk about a lot of things.
All righty.
Just a minute. I'll be right back.
I'll be here.
This is WFT Champaign 90.1 FM. We owe you a public service announcement. I'm behind. I've got a great caller on the line, and I hope he's there when I come back. Here's our first public service announcement.
Today, a new creature walks among us, causing fear, mayhem, and injury.
Stay back, children.
Look out for the dreaded digital deadwalkers. With faces pressed against their little handheld devices, they put all good citizens in harm's way.
Hey, dude, I'm walking here.
Sorry, I didn't see you.
A public service message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, who want to keep everyone well-connected with healthy bones.
And I owe you another public service announcement, so here this one is as well.
Hi, this is Curtis Stone. You name a dish, and I've prepared it thousands of times. But even I can't cook enough to feed all of the 17 million kids in America who are struggling with hunger. That's where the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks comes in. They gather surplus food to give hope to hungry kids and their families. We call them food angels, and you can be one too. Earn your wings at feedingamerica.org.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
This is WFT Champaign 90.1 FM. You're listening to The Midwatch. I'm Reasonable Man Stan. Following my program, around 8 o'clock, will be Adrian and the Sync Sound System. That is an electronic program. I think you'll enjoy it at least as much as you do this one. I want to remind you that the associates meeting just started about 5 minutes ago at the Independent Media Center at 2002 South Broadway in Urbana, Illinois. And if you had planned on going to the Civic Center, jump on over to the Media Center, 202, not 2002, but 202 South Broadway in Urbana. And now, my friend James, my new best friend James, has been hanging on the air. We've talked about religion about as long as I think I would like to talk about religion today, unless we get talking about religion when I get into the abortion talk I have for this evening planned. But right now we're going to talk about Bruce Rauner a little bit and what he's doing to the state of Illinois and the people that live in it. James, would you like to make a comment about what our state budget's like?
Our non-existent budget? The budget that we can't hammer out between all these politicians.
What's the main problem of hammering a budget out?
The main problem is somebody wants to spend money that we don't have. Somebody else doesn't want to approve of that money being spent. Somebody else wants to get more for themselves. And that's just your basic greed in action in the state of Illinois. It's just the way it works. I mean,
has there been retire poor? Have you're saying somebody wants to get more money for themselves? Who is that?
Well, I think Mr. Madigan, Mr. Cullerton. I don't think that Bruce Rauner is looking to make a whole lot more since he gave his check back.
Is he looking to improve the state of Illinois in some way?
I think he's trying.
What is that way?
He's trying to get more people working and moving in the state. But we're running them off like crazy because they're afraid of what's going to happen. I, for one, as a business owner, am scared to death of what's going to happen to taxes in the next few years.
You own your own business,
yep.
And your business employs how many people?
One.
Okay. So are you incorporated?
I can't afford an LLC in the state of Illinois at $200 a year and $600 initially. I paid the $600 initially, but when it came out that I had to give them $200 every year thereafter, I said, I don't need to be an LLC anymore. So I went back to sole proprietorship.
You can live in Illinois and be a corporation from New Jersey or Arizona or any other state.
Yes, I can. But the problem with that is when you incorporate in all these other states, they all have fees also.
But you don't
There's nobody who's going to let you have an absolute free label on your business. They all want money.
But they're not $200.
No, they're not $200 a year, but the state of Illinois is. And that just happens to be where I live, and, you know, it's where I have my license plate for my truck out of, which only cost me $3,139 last year. It's a bargain.
Okay, now you're talking about two different things. You're talking about an LLC, and you're talking about a license plate for a truck.
It's the same thing. It's the same business. I am an independent owner-operator of a one-truck company.
There you go.
And it is my company.
And your truck never leaves the state of Illinois.
No, my truck leaves the state of Illinois.
There you go.
My truck goes all the way into the bottom edge of Wisconsin. It touches the edge of Indiana. It touches part of Missouri occasionally. It touches Iowa occasionally. But the vast majority of my operating is done within the confines of the state of Illinois.
So your truck license fee is not only for the state of Illinois, it is for other states as well.
No.
Yes, it is.
The majority of my license, 98% of my driving is done in Illinois. 98% of my fee is
okay.
Illinois fee.
It is based on mileage, I agree, but part of the mileage that you run in your truck goes to other states. So when you say that your total state cost is $3,100, that's really the total state license fee.
That's for the license plate for my truck.
Mm-hmm.
And 2% of that fee goes to other states. 98% of that $3,100 is right here in beautiful Illinois.
Well, you're the one. You're the one running that license plate. When I was the accountant for a company that had, I think we had 7 trucks that we ran between Ohio and Missouri and Iowa and Michigan and Tennessee and Kentucky, we had multi-state plates, and the percentages for our trucks were based on mileage. And they were a lot less than what you're paying, but you know, I understand
because
where you're coming from. I understand
The more you get out of Illinois, and this is what the Secretary of State at the Howlett Building, another fine looking building in Springfield, told me. But my percentages for Indiana was 0.002%. For Kentucky was 0.001%. Missouri was 0.009993%, and Wisconsin was 0.03652. So that means that absolutely 99% of that money is the state of Illinois. $2,945 is the state of Illinois' fee for my license plate.
If you want to pay less in fees, the best advice I can give you, James, is to move to another state.
Is to run outside of the state of Illinois.
You would still pay the same amount of fees if you ran in Illinois,
but
even though you lived in another state.
But I can't escape those fees for 2 years.
You would say you would pay. It's based on mileage. So if you do your work in the state of Illinois, you have to work with the state of Illinois' charges. That's true. You understand that. You just explained it.
But what I'm telling you is, even if I left the state of Illinois and drove no more in the state of Illinois, for the next 2 years, I'm going to pay to get my license plate from the state of Illinois until I can produce tax statements or mortgages or electric bills, phone bills from my new residence for 2 years. I can't clear the state of Illinois. I'm not like Schneider or Warner.
All right.
So I can't I can't escape it at least 2 years.
I can't argue with you because I don't know those facts. I'm going to believe you because I believe you're telling the truth. Let's get back to why the state of Illinois does not have a budget today. Those organizations that I tried to go to get help for this single woman and 2 children have been starved of funding from the state of Illinois because Bruce Rauner and the legislature will not negotiate. Why will they not negotiate? Do you know that?
Yeah.
What is it?
Ideological loggerhead.
Okay. And what is the loggerhead? What's the ideology? What's the ideology?
The one side says less regulation, less government. The other side says more government, more regulation. They're diametrically opposed. One wants the government to be in charge of it. The other one says, let individuals be in charge of it.
I think you're making a little bit too simplistic, and I don't mean that to sound rude, but I think you're making a little bit too simplistic. We have right now a governor of the state of Illinois who has said publicly that he wants to have a zero minimum wage for people in the state of Illinois. He changed that after he got jumped by the people in the state of Illinois to say that he only wants the state of Illinois to match the federal minimum wage. The federal minimum wage, as you know, is $7.25 an hour, and the state of Illinois, as you know, has a minimum wage of $8.25 an hour. So you have a governor who wants to have the state of Illinois' minimum wage reduced, and that is part of his turnaround agenda. He will not sign a budget for the state of Illinois unless he has his turnaround agenda involved in it. Part of his turnaround agenda is an amendment to the Constitution of the state of Illinois, whereby the governor and the legislature can reduce pension benefits for retirees that are 75 and 80 years old just because they say they don't want to pay those benefits. That's the kind of things that Rauner is refusing to allow in the state of Illinois, and the Democratic legislature is saying, we're not doing your turnaround agenda. Bruce Rauner wants to have a right to work in the state of Illinois rather than a union state. A right-to-work state, people who work in right-to-work states make on average about 20% less than people that work in union states. Bruce Rauner is running on reducing the incomes of the middle-class Illinoisians.
Well, let me ask,
because that's what he does.
Let me ask you a question then. How many budgets have been brought to the House and the Senate floor to be passed that were balanced budgets, brought in, voted on, approved, and how many of them have Governor Rauner vetoed?
The Democrats came up with a budget that was $2 billion out of balance.
Out of balance.
Let me finish. That budget did not include any of Bruce Rauner's turnaround agenda, which would have reduced incomes for people in the state of Illinois, and Bruce Rauner vetoed it. Because he vetoed that budget, the debt of the state of Illinois, instead of being $2 billion out of balance, was $3 billion out of budget because of mandatory spending.
Because the court system, another branch of government, involved themselves in a way to make everybody pay. In an effort with the majority of our court system being run by your favorite folks, the attorneys and judges, who made people get paid. You're right. The state has not paid anybody. The state is holding out on everybody.
But no.
It's not just Bruce Rauner.
It's not.
It's both parties impressing upon everyone who has power. It's a power thing. Madigan and Cullerton have been ensconced in that office for years. They're never going to go anywhere. Everybody talks about Donald Trump now and how he would be such a good president and how he could turn things around. He could do no more for us there than what's being done by Bruce Rauner here. The solution, Bruce Rauner said on on the radio that he thought term limits would solve this problem. But the people who have to vote on the term limits are the people that are in the offices that don't want the term limits. I say term limits are never reelect anyone. Not the first time. You reelect them once, and when it comes reelection time, he hits the bricks, he goes back, he does whatever he was doing before he got there. That's term limits. Term limits don't have to be voted on by anybody in the House or anybody in the Senate. They have to be voted on by the people. And the people can control the thing they need to do. It's a peaceful revolution. It has nothing to do with political party then. It has to do with we don't reelect people. And if you run for dog catcher and the next year you want to be the sheriff, sorry, you had your one bite of this apple. That's the end of it.
So what you're saying is that you want, when you go to a doctor, the only doctor you want to see is the one that just graduated from med school.
There's a difference between doctoring, and you're right, I probably would prefer that, because he would be up on the most current and knowledgeable about what's going on currently. But
You wouldn't want the doctor that's done 1,000 operations of the kind you need. You would want the doctor that's doing his first or second one.
Probably. I tell you why. My wife now has permanently damaged lungs from a doctor who now has somebody else's lungs in his body. He knew all about the medicine he was giving her. He knew all about it. He was taking it too. And that protease inhibitor destroyed his bronchial tubes and destroyed his lungs. The same thing it was doing to my wife. And had I not been listening to talk radio, just like I was tonight, I would have never heard that that protease inhibitor was the cause of my wife's chronic bronchitis. And I went to another doctor and asked him. He had to go, and he was a young doctor, to the physician's reference book in his office. And he came back and he asked my wife if she'd be upset if I had it right. I'm not a doctor, but I was right. She no longer has chronic bronchitis. I think that the misnomer that you're trying to perpetrate is because somebody has experience in the job and has been there for a long time, they get better at it. My thought is the longer a person sits in a stagnant position, the more stagnant they become. The more firmly ensconced they become. We had a Democrat in this state who ran against Rod Blagojevich, who now is retired not only once from the school system, once from Williamson County government, but now he's retired from SIU, and he's making $1 million a year in retirement. Yes, I think somewhere along the line, retirements for people in such a state who got their money from the people should be curtailed. I don't see where that should be a problem. I see where a cop that's been out on the beat for 30 years has locked in his retirement and he retires. He should get his money.
That's not what Rauner wants.
But if somebody goes for 2 terms in a public office in this state, he's entitled to a full retirement and an office staff. And an office staff. That's $400,000 a year. How many blue-collar people could you support in a reasonable retirement on that kind of money?
But you just said you wanted it to work that way all the time.
Because he was a politician, we pay him that. No, that's wrong. I do. I want equanimity between all people. But I don't want anybody who didn't earn it, who didn't work for it, who didn't put skin in the game, to retire better than the people that had skin in the game their whole life.
You just got through saying you don't want these people to have skin in the game their whole lives.
I don't. That's right. I don't want politicians to have skin in the game their whole life. They shouldn't have. That's not work. It's like, what was that old song? Get your money for nothing and your chicks for free. That's all these people are doing, and they're staying there for 30 years. Cullerton needs 8,000 votes in his district, and he's reelected. That's insanity. He runs the whole state with an iron fist. People are afraid to cross him. That's too much power.
Are you talking about Cullerton or Madigan?
Madigan. It's too much power for anyone. And Plato said it best when he said, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. He wants to have absolute power. Bruce Rauner, yeah, he's trying to change some things up. He's trying to. He's not going to get it accomplished as long as we have career politicians telling him no. Somewhere along the line, in the mix of life, there's a place where all things mix together and become blended and work. The state of Illinois isn't that place. We're in the middle of the country, but we're as far to the left of the country as we can get right now. We can't get back to the basics of life in this state because we have a high population center in the north of the state who wants to bring the bacon home. Jan Rostenkowski was always said he brought the bacon home, but he had to take the bacon from the home before he could bring it back. The politicians who take the bacon out of the state and deliver it to their constituents because they think that's a good thing are wrong.
Well,
the state is for everybody.
Let me just say this about term limits. The only time that Republicans want term limits are when they are in the minority. Our very good Tim Johnson, prime example. Tim Johnson was a legislator at the state of Illinois level. I think he was in the equivalent of our House for 20 plus years. And then he decided to run to be a United States Congressman in 2000. And Tim Johnson said, as he was campaigning that year, I will only run for re-election twice because we need term limits, and I will term limit myself. He got elected, and within 90 days, he said, oh, I just found out something. I'll do a better job if I've been here longer. And he stayed.
And that's wrong.
And that's what they all do.
But how can you resolve that? The only way you can resolve that is the way I'm telling you to resolve it. Vote no one back in office for anything. Never, ever, never. If we took one-third of this country today and we said, you're voting for a six-year term for your senators and your congressmen, they're only going to get one six-year term, then 2 years later, we went to another third of this country and said, we're voting for a six-year term. And then we went to the last third 2 years later, and we would have some people with 6 years experience. They'd have the knowledge. We'd have some with 4 years experience, 2 to 4 years experience. They'd have a little less knowledge, but they'd know what's going on. And then we'd have the freshmen. And every time,
I
roll over.
The problem is I know of no one with a constitutional amendment like that.
And why would they not put it up? Why would they not put it up? Because it would limit them. The only way to get that ball of wax going
If we could do a constitutional like amendment like that, I'm on your team. But I am not on the team of the people who get snookered into thinking when a Democrat majority exists that we need term limits, and when a Republican majority exists, we need to be able to keep the same people in office forever. And that's our system now.
My feeling is we don't have Democrats. We don't have Republicans. We've got Demopublicans and Republicrats. And in my biased viewpoint, they're out for one person only. They are their own constituent. They are out for themselves and themselves only.
Their primary job, each of them feels their primary job is to get reelected. I agree with you. But in the state of Illinois, if you will just look at the state of Illinois as an example, we have a budget impasse because the Republican wants zero minimum wage and the Democrats want a living wage for middle-class Americans, and they will not negotiate.
But they gave him a budget. You said it yourself. They gave him a budget that was $2 billion out of whack.
Right.
They gave him a $2 billion out of whack budget.
Right.
What's that got to do with minimum wage? What's that got to do with any of his turnaround agenda? What that's got to do with his turnaround agenda is they spit on it. They spit in his face about his turnaround agenda, and they said, look, we can spend $2 billion more, and you'll approve it because we need a budget. And he said, no, I won't.
Because I want to cut the wages of middle-class Americans.
But he didn't say that. He said, I won't sign an out-of-whack budget.
And the only way to get the budget in whack is to destroy our school system and destroy all the other social safety net systems we have.
How can we destroy the school system?
Or have a tax increase. Or have a tax increase. And he won't have a tax increase.
He said he'll have a tax increase.
If he gets his turnaround agenda.
If he gets some of the points in his turnaround agenda. If he gets something. The crux of getting to a point of agreement is a little give, a little take, a little give, a little take. Not all take on one side, not all give on the other, not all take or all give on this side and all take on the other. It's a mesh together, but they haven't meshed together. None of them are talking about getting together. All they're talking about is, I'm not doing that.
What of the points I've given you that are in Rauner's turnaround agenda has he been willing to bend on?
He's already said he's willing to get a tax increase.
He said
he would do that. Now that's a give, is it not?
That is a give. What does he demand the Democrats give?
He said, give me something. They haven't given him anything. What have they offered up as a give? He said, I'll give you taxes. What have they offered up?
Well, you've got me. I can't name one thing right now. I can't name one thing. But the fact of the matter is the budget was $4 billion out of balance. The Democrats cut $2 billion out of that. I don't know exactly where, but he would not agree to that. And now we are $3 billion out of budget because the court's mandated expenditures are still happening. If he would have agreed to accept a $2 billion out of budget, out of balance budget, we wouldn't have the budget fiasco that we have right now. We would have more confidence in businesses being willing to come to the state of Illinois, but because of his unwillingness to negotiate, we don't.
Hold it. He negotiated. He gave. They didn't. He gave. They didn't. It's simple. It's a fact of negotiating a settlement or an agreement. Is both sides have to be willing to give up something. Okay.
Okay. Let's
the minimum wage thing that you talk about. Minimum wage was designed and instituted, and I have worked for minimum wage in my lifetime.
So have I.
I didn't stay there for long because now I negotiate for myself. I have been a union man. I was in a union. I was in a very strong union.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather negotiate for myself. I've had union thugs. I've had union people who have taken my dues and got me nothing but a harder row to hoe. I've seen it. Right to work, yeah, it might lower the wage. It might. But you can't say it definitely has to.
It has in every state that it exists in. What else do you need to know?
So we need to know that $15 an hour job for people flipping burgers is going to resolve and save the state of Illinois. There's going to be more people willing to come to Illinois with a $15 an hour minimum wage and fire up their business. Naivety is not my best suit.
It has always worked that way.
It has. When JFK said he didn't want to raise the minimum wage but was forced to, what did it do? It slowed the economy down. JFK opened it up just like Ronald Reagan did. What did it do? When the taxes went down, the contributions went up, the money flowed in.
That wasn't why the contributions went up.
Well, the people were making more money, therefore they were paying more tax.
When
you're not making money, you're not going to be taxed. If I own a business and I have to pay my employees $15 an hour, then I have to withhold more from their taxes. But they're being taxed at the bottom rate. If I had it in my hand, you'd take it away from me bigger.
When we had Kennedy as president and he reduced the taxes, he also reduced some spending to offset the taxes. That's why there was more money that came in.
He reduced some spending, but a lot more money came in than went out. A lot, and the same thing happened with Reagan. Reagan was a union-killing machine. He killed Petco. There's no doubt in my mind.
Right.
But at the same time he killed Petco, we went on strike at Marion Federal Penitentiary because we had two guys killed in one day, and they wanted us to open back up. And we said no. He didn't kill the union at the prison. He did bring in prison guards from all over the country and stocked the place with people who would be there, but that prison never reopened the way it was because people wouldn't allow it.
So the union worked.
So, yeah, the union defended that one thing.
The union
and
worked.
That one thing is that time. But I also worked for a machine shop in Libertyville, Illinois, making $25 an hour, which the boss was willing to pay us. But the union came in, said they could get us $100 an hour. Everybody voted the union in. I didn't. Everybody voted this union in, and within 2 years, the doors were shuttered. All the work was in Mexico, and I was unemployed. And the union did nothing to stop that. They took my dues every week. Oh, yeah, that came out every week, just as regular as a pump hand. The problem is unions are only as strong as the people that are involved in them. The people of this country, the people of this state, need to be absolutely sick of what's going on. They need to stand up and say, this is not going to continue. We will take action.
What this is not going to continue.
This budget impasse, this $7 million offering, this $2 million over budget offering, we're going to go to where it's a zero-based budget. Everybody's going to come. Some people are going to lose something. Everybody's going to lose a little something. And some people might lose more than others. Let's take care of the poor and the needy. Let's take care of the people that really need it. Let's let the people that can make it on their own kind of go out and make it on their own. Wow. But when we don't do that, when we try to regulate them into the pit, nobody wants to get up. Everybody wants to live in the pit.
Well,
I don't want to live in the pit.
Those, I want to live up. Those are. It is. I agree with you. It's very hard to start a small business nowadays. But the reason it's so hard to start a small business nowadays is because of the deregulation to a very real extent that Republicans have brought on us.
Well,
they have allowed a reinstitution of monopoly power. Back in 1980, it took almost 100 corporations to reach 80% of the market of people listening to radio, TV, and newspaper. Now it takes 6. We have done away with the prohibition against monopolies, and that's made it more difficult for the small guy to get into business. That is just reality, and that is Republican politics.
I drive a truck for a living. I drive a semi. I have my own authority. Before 1986, I couldn't have had my own authority. There was a very limited number of corporations who had authority, DOT, regulated authority, to move freight within this country. If you wanted to work for one of those 100 companies, you were great.
I was talking about media corporations. I don't know about the trucking industry the media corporations.
Well, and I don't know about the media corporations, but I do know about trucking. And I do know that anybody can buy a truck and get their authority today. And if they're survivor and they can fight through the rain, they can stay afloat. And if they're not, they'll sink faster than putting rocks in their pocket.
That's all small businesses.
But I've been at this for a long time, and I know that there's more government regulation on the trucking industry than there is on a media corporation. I have never seen anybody walk into a radio station, TV station, a government official go in and say, throw down your books, open up all your paperwork, let me inspect your equipment. They do it in the trucking industry daily, and you see them pulled over on the side of the road continuously. And if you take the statistics, it doesn't warrant what we've got going on.
The guys that are pulled over on the side of the road, unless they're at a way station, are not. I mean, that's
a missed thought. In your mind's eye, they did something wrong to get pulled over.
Right.
You know what? That's wrong. Anytime a police officer wants to pull a semi over, he has the authority, the right, and he can pull you over for anything.
Well, I know that.
Nothing has to be wrong with your equipment.
Well,
nothing has to be wrong with you. Nothing has to be wrong with the way you're driving.
I used to live in Clay County. I don't know what county you live in. I used to live in Clay County, and my dad was involved in law enforcement. And we had a state trooper in Clay County that could see a truck driving down the road and tell if it was overweight just by looking at it. And
by the way it sat on the road.
Huh?
By the way it sat on the road, where the tires bubbled. There's so many ways that that he could tell.
Exactly.
But you know what? I'll guarantee you, some of the times he was wrong. But what has that got to do with the safety of our nation's highway? 44,000 people killed in 2012 on our nation's highway. You know how many involved semi-tractors and trailers?
No, I don't.
3,500.
Semi-tractors in the United States are indeed some of the safest vehicles on the roads. I don't disagree with that.
But not according to our government. Our government, in just a week, just next week, they're going to have what they call the safety blitz. They're going to pull every truck they can over. They're going to inspect it as fast as they can and get another one right behind it. They're going to inspect 90 to 120,000 trucks in the next 3 days, the 5th through the 7th. And it's going to be okay that the government's doing that. I signed on to be a truck driver. I didn't sign away my Fourth Amendment right.
Well,
I obviously have.
I guess I can't think it's kind of silly to announce the days you're going to have the blitz. But that's...
Well, the reason they do that is then they can go out and say, well, we found XYZ was still wrong. We found 6,000 trucks that still had bad brakes, and we told them that's what we were going to be checking for. But things break on equipment. And this morning, I might have inspected my brakes, and I had to hit them too hard 3 or 4 times, and now I haven't had a chance to back up and make the automatic adjusters readjust them, and I'm pulled over. But I'm still going to be safe, but I'm going to pay a bunch of money to the state of Illinois. Because they can inspect me anytime. Didn't do that to media. They're doing it to me.
They can.
It's where I live.
We're constantly inspected. What do you mean?
I mean, if you got profane on the air,
right,
and it got caught, that's one thing. But you can't tell me that the shock jocks of the late 70s, early 80s, were so regulated that they couldn't do what they did. And that's when you had all these operators out there, right? The Steve Dahls of the world.
When we had the large number of corporations, yes, that's true.
Okay, so now there's some fallacies in what you said.
So what you're saying is we're better off media-wise to have a handful of people decide what people find out on the media, right?
No. But I think we are duped into believing that we're being told the full story.
Exactly, James. And I'm going to use what you just said as a segue into a piece that I want to get into yet this evening, and I am vastly running out of time. I've really had a wonderful time talking to you, and I hope that you'll call back. Are you on the road right now?
Yeah, I'm moving through the area, but I'm through here quite frequently, and now that I know you exist, I will definitely be listening for you. Like I say, I don't know that I changed your mind. I don't know that you changed mine, but I appreciate the open forum and discussion that you allowed.
That's what I try to do here, James. Try to keep it above board for people. I'm not trying to push. I believe that I am correct about most things, as you do. That's what I say. We're going to have to agree to disagree on a lot of different things. But I also have some facts that I'm going to try to squeeze in here in the next 5 minutes or so, and. I need to get off the air with you right now, so I'm going to really appreciate you letting me have all of this information that you've given me, because it's been very valuable, and I hope that you will call back soon.
Thank you, sir, and you have a good night.
You too. Good luck, and be safe out there.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, that was my friend Steve. He's a truck driver going from here to there on the road tonight. I hope he has a very safe trip. Might be a little bit slick out there with the hit and miss rain showers, and I hope he's able to dodge them all and keep the treads on the ground rather than in the air. I'm going to get off of here with a little... I'm not getting off here. I'm going to take about a 30-second water break and have a little bit of Ann Feeney's Corporate Welfare.
It's time to end welfare as we know it and get those greedy chiselers off the dole. It's time to end welfare as we know it. Teach them a little self-control. For far too long we've allowed these corporate hogs to belly up to the public trough. No more welfare as we know it. No more handouts, cut them off. Now we should all be irate at this huge welfare state, right here in this mightiest of nations. AFDC is disgraceful to me. I'm talking aid for dependent corporations. Free enterprise, ha, the cruelest of lies. It cost us $200 billion just last year. If they paid their fair share, we'd have billions to spare. It's time to tell them the buck stop here. Let's consider Charlie Hurwitz, the CEO at Maxam, holding Redwood Forests hostage in a vicious little tax scam. It's clear cut we picked up the tab for Charlie's union busting, then paid him to pollute our water. Jesus, that's disgusting. Charlie won't repay $500 million that he stole from a Houston SNL. What say we kick him off the dole? It's time to end welfare as we know it and get those greedy chiselers off the dole. It's time to end welfare as we know it. Teach them a little self-control. For far too long we've allowed these corporate hogs to belly up to the public trough. No more welfare as we know it. No more handouts. Cut them off. That Taco Bell Chihuahua begs for bucks for Frito-Lay. And Poppin' Fresh from Pillsbury needs more dough every day. That thief Ronald McDonald and his sidekick Mayor McCheesy burglarize our treasury in ways that make me queasy. That nasty little mermaid took tax dollars overseas to hire thugs to bring poor Haitian workers to their knees. It's time to end welfare as we know it and get those greedy chiselers off the dole. It's time to end welfare as we know it. Teach them a little self-control.
Yes, yes, yes. Teach a little self-control to the greedy dogs that run some of these large corporations like Monsanto that has all the GMO-type things and such. Had a very interesting conversation just now with James, truck driver in the area. He's a great guy. I hope that he is safe out there, and I hope he does call back again next week. Wednesday evenings from 6 to 8, you could be able to hear me here, and I will rant and rave about a whole lot of different things. And James is a very good foil for my comments because he's a knowledgeable person as well. He knows about some things that I have no knowledge of, and I think I know about a couple of things that he doesn't have knowledge of, but I think that we agree on some things, and that's the way it usually works. One of the things that he said that we do need to think about, though, is compromise. And I believe that when the state of Illinois has a $4 billion deficit and the Democrats are finding ways to cut it to $2 billion and the government and the governor doesn't see that as some sort of compromise, I think that's incorrect. I think the government's compromise was, give me my turnaround agenda, which reduces the incomes of the average person in the state of Illinois. It would allow, I believe, my new friend James to have more competition. But be that as it may, I wanted to talk a little bit about abortions. That's why I was hoping that Willie would call tonight when I got into this, but James called first, and that's just Willie's loss. But I can come back to this next week because I'm not going to have very much time for it, this conversation that I wanted to have on abortion tonight. When you look at the abortion information that you receive, because of media consolidation, what you're receiving is more propaganda than it is reality. If you look at the size of the United States of America since 1973's Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision and today, there are women that could have been of childbearing years the entire time. The entire population of women in Illinois, or not in Illinois, but in the United States, has been a little over 100 million. The anti-abortion, the anti-choice crowd wants people to think that there have been some 45 million abortions since 1973. If there's been 110 million women in the United States able to have children, that means that almost 40% of them would have had to have had at least one abortion. If you know of somebody that has had one abortion, you are a very rare individual. Most people know of no one that has had even one abortion. And yet the anti-choice crowd wants you to believe that there's been that many abortions. In order for there to have been that many abortions, there has to have been women having at least 50 to 100 abortions in their lifetimes. That seems a lot to me. Maybe it's not impossible, but it is definitely improbable. I didn't even touch the top of the iceberg with the abortion concept. But if you just look at Fox News alone, 70% of the time, Fox News has their people that talk about abortion being identified as anti-choice or consistently anti-choice statements. With that little thought out there, you can do your research. I'll see you next Wednesday about 6 o'clock. Adrian's on his way in right now. Y'all be safe out there until then. I'm going to get out of here this week with a little David Rovics, Resistance. See you next Wednesday. Be safe till then.